I knew the direction I wanted to take, and I was focused on it, and I pushed myself, and I, you know, went to summer school, and I maxed out as many hours as I could.
Welcome to the Passion Behind the Art Show. It's all about diving in with individuals to learn the awesome story behind your passion. It's your host, Daryl Pinnock. Enjoy this week's episode.
All right, I'm pretty excited to have the podcast pro for Creative South on the Passion Behind the Art Show, Jason Frostholm. Welcome, Jason.
Daryl, thanks for having me. I'm really excited to do this. It's rare that I'm on the other side of the microphone, so this should be interesting.
Yes, the interviewer gets interviewed.
I've only done it a couple times.
So let's kick it off. How did this all start for you? Did you know that out the gate, out your mother's womb, I'm going to be a designer? How did this all start for you?
No, I mean, fairly normal childhood. I mean, I was never real into sports. I always liked drawing and stuff. Kind of got into it just through doodling, and it started off with I had a love for Garfield. So I always drew Garfield a lot, and then, you know, growing up in the 80s, there were a lot of this director named Savage Steve Holland, who made movies like Better Off Dead and One Crazy Summer. Then, like, all of them had John Cusack in it. Okay. And in the movie One Crazy Summer, John Cusack wants to be an artist, but his mom wants him to be a basketball player, and he's horrible at it. So he drew, and he wanted to be an animator, and he drew all these little things, and it just really inspired me. And I started drawing more and more and trying to figure out what my own style was, which, you know, however many years, 30 plus years later, I'm still trying to figure that out. But that's kind of how I got into it. And then went to, you know, high school and was in central Kentucky, in the middle of it, really moved there, and it was a small town where everybody had already grown up together and all that. Oh. So I was kind of the outsider. So I took every art class I could, and I was, when you get towards your junior and senior year, when you can start adding more and more electives in, was basically asking them to make up art classes for me, which was just basically me taking extended 3-hour days in the art room and just drawing and painting and all of that stuff. And I had a buddy at the time, actually a couple buddies at the time, who were also into art. And one of them was on the swim team with me. And he, I don't know how he came about it, but he was like, I really want to get into advertising. Mm-hmm. So I was like, maybe that's what I want to do. And started kind of looking into that when I, you know, then we moved my senior year of high school to Augusta, Georgia, which I was just telling you off air that, you know, I went to high school there and started college, finished my senior year up, and started college in Augusta, and right out the gate declared advertising as my major. But I wasn't focusing on the art side. And really, you couldn't get into the art classes until after, like, your first year anyways. You had to go through all the core level stuff, and they were pretty strict about how that did. But I was drawing constantly and all that. But that turned into me not doing so well in college, and them asking me to leave for a semester, which turned into about 3 years. And after that 3 years, I decided real quickly I did not want to be the meat department manager at Winn-Dixie or be putting together golf cart suspension stuff for the rest of my life. I was definitely not good at the putting together golf cart suspensions. I think I was okay at being a butcher, but I didn't really enjoy it. So my parents had moved down to where I live now here in the Mobile area. And I just basically called them up hat in hand because they had, I won't say they had cut me off, but they were not going to pay for school anymore after my, you know, proving that I wasn't very good at it or good at being responsible for it. And moved out here and got back in school. And at that time, you know, I don't know what had made me decide that I wanted to be a graphic designer. There wasn't anything really specific that made me decide that.
Okay.
But I knew I wanted to do something with art. Started taking art classes and had been a Mac user since I was 10 years old. We literally had like the Mac SE Plus was our first computer.
Wow.
And saw that they were doing art stuff on computers and was like, well, that makes sense to me. And then that's kind of where things started off. So went to University of South Alabama. Once I got back in school, I graduated in 3.5 years. So I like to tell people that even though I took a really long break, I graduated much quicker than most people do. But at that, you know, at that point I was older. I was, you know, I didn't get back in college till I was 21.
Okay.
So I knew the direction I wanted to take and I was focused on it and I pushed myself and I, you know, went to summer school and I maxed out as many hours as I could take. And, you know, my senior year of college, aside from working as the lab assistant, the graphic design lab assistant at the university, I didn't have a job. My job was school.
Oh.
And being the lab assistant was perfect because basically I was up there all the time anyways. So now I was just getting paid to do what I was going to be doing anyways.
Right.
So yeah, that's how the short story long of how I kind of got into it.
Cool. So, I mean, sometimes I always hear like the different stuff designers did before they got into design. It's just always crazy, like the odd jobs and the
sure.
the paths we take. Like, but I think you took the cake by being a butcher. Mm-hmm. I think you took the cake.
Yeah, I can't say it was a choice. It was what was available. And yeah, it was an interesting job. It was, you know, it taught me a lot about customer service. I will say that is even when somebody's a jerk to you, you gotta be nice to them.
Right.
You know, and definitely humbled me. That was for sure. But yeah, it was an interesting job and, one that I'm glad I don't have to keep doing.
Right. Totally understand, man. And usually those jobs are usually not choices. Usually
yeah. Now, like... I will say I would much rather be a butcher than I would go back and have to do putting together those golf cart suspensions. That was just grueling and very demeaning because it was always somebody who had a chip on their shoulder who was above somebody else and
gotcha.
Lots of Napoleon complexes going on all the way from the top down.
Gotcha. So what would you say was the hardest struggle in like before you even got to being the podcast editor at Creative South?
Oh, geez. The hardest job. Yeah, I think we're all very lucky in that we don't have a really hard job. I mean, we get to play on computers all day. We get to draw all day. We might have to deal with some challenging personalities
right.
from time to time.
Right.
And I think that's where the biggest issue comes from. Right. Or we might get in, you know, positions where, you know, we're not doing necessarily what we thought we would be doing. In my first job out of college, I worked for a printing company doing prepress. I mean, I was a production artist. So that wasn't, you know, it certainly wasn't the most rewarding job, but I learned a heck of a lot of stuff. You know, I learned proper production technique, and I learned about separations and about bleed and about, you know, trapping things and, you know, what a rich black was versus just a flat black, and how to build for that. So that it taught me a lot of basics. So I mean, I think with every job that you have, those struggles, that while they may suck during the immediate time, you usually learn something from them. Or if you're doing it right, you should be learning something from them.
That's true. And when you said, like, one of the things you learned was customer service, I think probably more than anything else, that's probably what I took from all these other jobs that wasn't design oriented.
Mm-hmm. What did you do when you were coming?
I was a laborer for an electrician. A lot of mine was in the construction field. Because when I started out on my journey, I wanted to be an architect.
Oh, okay.
So a lot of that was, I was a laborer for electrician, worked at Subway's at one point. It was right across the street from my college, so it was just like, duh.
You were an artist then, it was just a sandwich artist.
I guess you could say that. But that's probably anywhere else. I think that's where I learned most of the customer service. Just being able to keep that cool face dealing with hungry people. Mm-hmm. So that was probably the toughest part, you know. But what else? I think everything else was very architectural based until 2010.
Sure. Yeah. What made you switch?
Well, the thing is, I started architecture. Mm-hmm. I had the college that I was going to, because it was architectural based, I was going there. They found me a job after a certain amount of credits. That's a part of the curriculum. So after a certain mm-hmm. amount of credits, they find you a job, found me a job. It wasn't working out there, so I had to leave that job. And during that span of time, I just caught on to graphic design.
Oh, really?
And it just fascinated me. At that time, I was completely terrible. And it just fascinated me, and then eventually they found me another job. So between 2006 and 2010, I was just been doing it on the side.
Oh, really?
So even when I was going to this engineering drawing plans, mm-hmm. I was doing graphic design on the side. And eventually it just completely switched when I had to relocate, because all this time I was living in New York.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so but that's basically how I just caught love of it and just put in some sweat, because I didn't go to school for it. I basically taught myself. So
it was gotcha.
a lot of sweating of it. Yeah. But it was like a new found joy. So it was just, I didn't even feel it. I was just immersed.
You were excited about it and it just kept going from there?
Yeah. Yeah. Basically.
Cool.
So let's get to, how did this Creative South journey happen now?
So Creative South, and I've told this before, so I'll give you the condensed version of leading up to it. And we were talking about Diane Gibbs before we started. You know, she's got her show Design Recharge, and I was watching that, and I don't remember who came on first, if it was Mike Jones or if it was Peter Del Tondo, but you know, learned about Creative South through that. That I'm pretty sure it was Mike that came on first, and he was talking about Creative South, and I was, you know, really excited about it. But I learned about it really quickly, right before Creative South. I mean, it was probably like March, you know, middle of March when I learned about it. Hmm. I was like, oh, well, we'll have to save up for that next year. That sounds pretty cool. And then I think like the next episode or pretty closely after that, Peter was on there and he was talking about design versus cancer and how, you know, what that meant to him and how Creative South really helped him with things with that. And he announced that he was giving away a pair of tickets to it. So, you know, went on Facebook and said, I want to go because my wife's a designer as well. It made perfect sense, at least to me. And four or five people turning the tickets down later because they couldn't get off work or arrange things or afford a hotel or anything. My wife and I were the winner of the tickets. So
that is epic.
Yeah. So we scrambled real quick, and I mean, thankfully my work was really good about it. You know, they let me off. They offered to cover the hotel, and the rental car on the way up, and my meals. So I've been really lucky with that. My work, you know, does cover quite a few conferences. Last year, I think I went to 3 conferences.
Wow.
So it was really cool. So that's how I fell into it. And then, you know, met Peter, made friends with him, made friends with like Lenny Terenzi and a few other people there, and stayed in contact with them through the rest of the year. Literally didn't see Mike the entire time I was up there until we were leaving. We had to leave early because it was such last minute that, you know, we couldn't get things arranged where we could have our parents, my parents watched my kids the first 2 days, and then the next 2 days, my wife's parents were watching the kids, and they had already had plans and stuff like that. So we were rushing back home and didn't get to stay for the full Saturday of the conference. But
okay.
As we were walking out the door, I saw Mike, and I just, you know, stopped him and shook his hand and said thanks. And then in typical Mike Jones fashion, you know, he got me in a big sweaty bear hug. Not that he's always sweaty, just during Creative South.
Yeah.
You can ask anybody on staff. We're always all running in different directions. And then it just, you know, so that year was interesting because my wife and I were really wallflowers that year. Because we really didn't know anybody.
Right.
At that point, I hadn't even met Diane face to face. I'd been interacting with her for about a year on social media, but hadn't met her face to face. So she was the only real person that, you know, we sort of knew up there. And so that first year we were really wallflowers and kind of kept ourselves. And, you know, I think part of that was good because neither my wife or I are the biggest social butterflies. We're both kind of introverted, a little shy. So I was getting a feel of it and trying to come out of our shells. And then the next year we went again and we were much more gregarious and much more outgoing and able to talk with more people and had developed basically internet friendships with a bunch of people.
Cool.
So for whatever reason, I felt a lot braver and was introducing myself to people who I'd only interacted with on Facebook or Twitter and things like that. And I started thinking throughout the rest of it, and then, you know, throughout this entire time, like, my friendship with Mike's growing, my friendship with Peter and Lenny's growing, and it just kind of dawned on me that Creative South was home, and I felt like it had given us a lot of something, and wanted to give back. And at the same time, another friend of mine who does podcasts, who lives here in town, Johnny Gwynn, he's been a guest on my show as well. You know, he had started a podcast studio and had been pestering me for a while about, you need to do a podcast. And I couldn't think of anything that I had to say.
Right.
And the reason he pestered me is because he knew I love podcasts. Like, I listen to them all the time. I've got, you know, 4 or 5 that are in my standard rotation. And then I switch out different ones and try to bring in new things. But so he kept trying to pester me to do that. And I just started thinking about it throughout that summer. And I don't know, it's relatively quick, like October, November-ish. I reached out to Mike and was like, what would you think about doing a podcast? And I kind of laid out what I wanted to do. And I was like, you know, my two favorite podcasts that are always in my rotation are WTF with Mark Maron and the Nerdist podcast with Chris Hardwick. And they're both, you know, long form interview shows, but they're more conversational than they are interviewee. So I kind of pitched that to him, and then he's like, yeah, I mean, ironically, we were just talking about this the other day. And then you know, I think that'd be a great idea. And he's like, send me a list of what you need and we'll figure out what we can do. So I sent him a list of just literally the bare bones basic of what I thought I needed. Mm-hmm. And this was, you know, I, at that point when I pitched it to him, I hadn't done research of like, how do you get a podcast online or how do you get it to sync with iTunes or any of that stuff. I hadn't even really researched like what equipment I need. So, I mean, I was just like Googling every podcast equipment hosting thing I could think of, and cobbling stuff together and kind of coming up with a plan, and was like, okay, so here's what I need. And it was literally, it's the microphone I'm talking to you on now. It was like, I think really that's the basic. And then I need a hosting plan. So let's go with this one. And we use Simplecast, and I've been really happy with it. You know, they're not quite as robust as Libsyn, and I'm going to bore a bunch of people with this tech talk, but you'll understand what I'm talking about.
I'm already giddy already.
Yeah, but they're also, you know, they're quite a bit cheaper, which, you know, didn't have any money. It's not like, you know, it's not like podcasts make money. I mean, some podcasts make money, but
it's a very long form. Very
yes.
long term.
Yes. Most podcasts do not make money.
Right.
So I had that list over to him in like a week, and then he calls me up like 2 days after I sent him. He's like, what's your address? I gave him my address. And it's like, why? He's like, I'm sending you all that stuff. Let's get started. So I was like, I didn't have time to think about it. You know, and I thank him for that. Because had I had time to think about it, I would have overthunk things. And I would have probably dragged my feet and procrastinated a lot more. But, you know, so I got like the equipment and stuff probably the week before Christmas. And then a few days after Christmas, I'm setting up my first recording, and it's, you know, the first person I recorded with and the third person I recorded with was Lenny Terenzi. And the first one, we screwed it up and there were problems, so we went back and redid it again. And then I talked with Mike, and we put out Mike's episode first, you know, since he's co-founder of Creative South, and then we put out Lenny's. And then I reached out, and I still think it took balls of me, and this is no reflection on the guest, but I think it was probably one of my worst episodes, just because I was so nervous. I reached out to Fraser Davidson, who, if y'all don't know Fraser, he's this incredible animator and designer and illustrator, based out of the UK. He's done tons of stuff with ESPN and NCAA, and partnered with, does a lot of sports branding stuff. And he's just really cool. So, while we had interacted on Twitter, like we followed each other on Twitter, but that was it. I mean, I reached out to him and got up at, I think, 5:30 in the morning to do an interview with him, because he's, you know, based in London, and I wanted to, you know, be conscious of his time and not have him up at 3 a.m. So did that, and then just kept rolling from there. And, you know, it took off and it snowballed. And by, you know, I think I had gotten 5 or 6 banked before we actually even started releasing episodes.
Cool.
So started recording, like I said, end of December, started putting them up the 1st of February. I think it was the 1st of February.
What year was that?
This was 2016.
Okay.
Yeah, 2016 we started putting them up. It'll be 2 years this February. And now, you know, we've gone through and I've done over 100 episodes. We're well over 100,000 downloads. And it's not slowing down anytime soon, and I still really like doing it. I think, you know, throughout this, though, and please interrupt me if I'm getting ahead of myself or if you think of anything else to ask. One of the things I did is, and this was not a smart thing, I, I overextended myself and I was recording so many episodes, and then I went to a conference and recorded a bunch of mini episodes. It started off, I was releasing one episode a week, and then pretty quickly I had such a backlog and I was recording so much. I mean, there was a time where I was recording 3 or 4 episodes a week. So that backlog, even putting out one, I was still piling up and piling up. So I started putting out 2 episodes a week. Oh. And then come like August of that year, I had all those mini episodes. I still had such a backlog. I started putting out 3 a week. And I had started cutting back a little bit on how many I was recording. But I was, you know, and keep in mind, this is in the first year of me doing the podcast. I was already getting burned out.
I can imagine. So, trust me, I know.
Yeah. I'm sure you can. I mean, it's a lot of work that goes into these. And I mean, you got to edit them, you got to piece them together, you got to make sure the album art works up, you got to wrangle people to get them, you know, there's a lot of work that goes into it. But I'd really burn myself off, and I had enough of a backlog that I took the entire month of December and January off from recording.
Wow, that's awesome, though, that you
could. It is, but then, like, that shook my confidence. Oh. And I got in my head. I was really nervous about getting people booked again. And I felt like this weight of responsibility of, I've got to get this stuff out. I've got to get more out. Do I need to keep up at this point? And I don't remember who I talked to. I talked to somebody. Oh, I know who I talked to. I talked to Jordan Schiller, who's, over at Real Thread. And We were talking about not podcast stuff. We were just, I don't even remember what we were talking about, but I told him, you know, kind of what was going on. And, you know, he was like, dude, I think you need to go back to one episode a week. I think you're putting out too many and people are not going to want to listen. Like, it's just overwhelming, and you need to give listeners a break, and that'll help your numbers, and, you know, give yourself a break, and that'll help you. And so I just made a decision right after that conversation. The next episode I put out, I was like, we're going back to one episode a week. We're putting out one episode a week. I appreciate everybody turning in, but I can't keep running at this pace. I've got a wife, I've got kids. I would like to spend time with them. Plus at this time I was starting to ramp up and try to get freelance work in, which is something I hadn't really done much of before that. So okay. I needed to find a way to balance everything, and I'm still trying to figure that out. But yeah, so now we're back to one episode a week. I mean, when Creative South rolls around again, we'll have bonus episodes of stuff that we record there. But you know, I'm gonna try to stick with one episode a week, unless somebody, you know, finds a way to start paying me full time to do more.
I mean,
which is a hint. If you want to pay me full time to do more, I would love to. Anyone? Yeah.
That's awesome though, because my question is, why did you start to lose confidence during that break? Do you know?
I think it was because I wasn't talking with people, and I wasn't booking people, and. When I started booking people again, like I sent and I've changed my process, and part of me changing my process of how I book people was directly related to that. Before, what I was doing is I would send out an email, and I literally would send it out to one person, and I'd give them like, I'm available this day and this day and this day. And then I'd wait for them to book it. And then I would send out another email. I'm available this day, this day, and this day. And at the most, I could send out like 2 people and kind of do alternating dates to book them. And it just, I'd send out a bunch and I wasn't hearing anything back. And as you know, can be very stressful. And I was like, well, maybe we've jumped the shark and nobody wants to be on the show anymore. Maybe, right. You know, not interested. I'm not going to be able to book people. And it just, you know, I'm definitely one of those people. I am very guilty of, I get in my head way too much. And this was one of those cases, and I got a case of the yips, and I just, you know, I hadn't talked to people in so long that I was nervous going back into it. It was almost like starting over. And I'm sure that, you know, you've recorded enough episodes where you can go back and listen to your first one and you probably cringe at it compared to what you do now.
Right.
Because I know I do. I mean, I can go back 10 episodes and go, ugh, then man, why did I do that? And it just, it was all that stuff that just got to me and got in my head. And
I see.
I had to get back on the horse of recording episodes, booking more people, and all that stuff to kind of work it out. And I mean, I still get nervous whenever I'm calling someone I've never spoken with before to do the podcast. I still get nervous. I still get nervous sending out that email of just booking people. And it's an email.
Right. It's, that's just, right. It's,
yeah, there's really nothing. The worst they're going to say is no. Right. And then you just move on to the next one. So, yeah, so I changed my process and I went out and I found out, you know, I don't know what you call them, but basically a booking software that I can send out to as many people as I want. It gives them a list. I set my dates of when I record now. So now I record on Thursday evenings when I get home from work, and then I'll do Sunday either in the morning or after dinner. So I'm recording Sunday before my kids get up or after dinner. On a 90-day cycle where it's 90 days out, it sends off to people, and it they can pick which time and when is best for them, and you know, it eliminates that hassle where now I can send it out. I can send it out to 15 people if I want to.
What software is that?
Calendly. I'll send you a link when we get done. Yeah, and it's just been great, and it's, you know, it integrates with Google Calendar, and it's, you know, it saves a lot of hassle and a lot of headache, and I can start scheduling out. And now I'm, you know, I'm booked through October, and I'm starting to book into November.
Awesome.
Yeah. So that worry of, oh God, am I going to have enough people to fill this month, has gone away.
That's like so cool, man. That sounds good to have a booking software, because like
yeah, when we get done, I'll fill you in on all the nerdy stuff so we don't bore your audience too much.
Yeah, but it's just like, you know, because the biggest, I think that the conflicts of times is because I interview a lot of like not just creative people, but they're creative too. But how my podcast started was with musicians.
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of my hack into the music, because
your gateway in.
Yeah, because that was kind of like a hidden passion, and I have like a lot of other projects that's not design oriented with music and stuff like that. So that was kind of like my hack in, and a lot of them, like the easiest ones to deal with, were unfortunately outside of the U.S. And you know, so I know what you're talking about, waking up 5:30 in the morning to interview someone like in Sweden and all this stuff. So it was that's probably, but I right now, how my process is set up, I'm basically catering to the guest.
Sure.
As you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but why did you choose Simplecast? Other from the fact that I know it's a better price, but
better price. Somebody else had recommended it to me. It seemed a lot more intuitive and easy to use than Libsyn. Libsyn, and from what I understand, and having looked at Libsyn now, it's not that bad once you get into it. But their literature makes it look like it is overly complicated.
Okay.
And I mean, it does all the same stuff, and it, you know.
Because yeah. I'm gonna tell you, it's because of you why I'm using Simplecast right now.
Are you really?
Yeah, because of you.
Yeah, it's easy, isn't it?
Because I was using SoundCloud before. But the problem
SoundCloud
with that
is so...
The biggest issue for me was that it couldn't automate.
Yeah, there's no automation to it. And it's a pain in the butt. And I don't even post my stuff on SoundCloud anymore. Like I had started off and, you know, I would, you know, post my stuff on Simplecast and then go manually put it on SoundCloud. And, you know, I just started looking at analytics and all. Nobody will ever listen to it on SoundCloud. Nobody. Like, throughout the history of all of my things, I probably have 15 listens directly through SoundCloud. And I was like, why am I wasting time on this?
Totally understand. So I just wanted to let you know that it was because of you. I'm using Simplecast now.
I'm glad I could help. It's easy, isn't it?
Scotty was like, Daryl, use Libsyn.
Scotty uses Libsyn.
Tried to go over to Libsyn, and I was like intimidated immensely. And I was like just dabbling around, getting ready to make a move. And I checked out, and I was like, I listen to Creative South. What do they use? Because it just always looks so clean. So I had to do a little digging, and then I realized that you guys used Simplecast.
Dude, you could have just emailed me. It would have saved you a lot of time.
See, the thing is, and that's the truth. And a lot of that I don't really figure out and realize until you are doing a podcast and you realize that all you got to do is really talk to people and reach out to them. You know what I mean?
No, I'm the same way. I, you know, that fear of reaching out to people has always held me back. And I mean, it still holds me back a lot. But I will say doing the podcast has helped with that a lot.
Yes.
Because it, you know, it forces me out of my comfort zone where I have to go out and I have to talk to people. And I have to be able to, you know, carry a conversation if the person that I'm talking to is nervous, you know, to make. Not to make myself look good, but to make them look good. That's the hardest job of hosting something, I think. And I'm sure you've found it that way too, where you've probably had interviews where you're just like in the middle of it going, oh, this is really rough. And this is really, and we're not going to call anybody out. I know it was you, Dylan. I'm just kidding. I love you, Dylan.
it happens, and it's, you gotta still carry it. And sometimes those episodes end up being shorter than the usual ones.
They do. And then, you know, it's interesting, though, because I've had interviews where it started off really rocky and I thought it was going to be really bad.
And it ended up being good.
And it ended up being good. And it's, you know, I think for me, and this is going off on a tangent, and it's literally for me going off on tangents actually helps me have a better interview and better conversation. Like I don't go in with, like, I have a set format for the show.
Right.
And it's, you've listened to the show. It's, you know, you talk about early life, you talk about school, you talk about early career, you talk about how you got into where you are now. And then you wrap up with, hey, what's exciting going on? It's not rocket science. I mean, you listen to a ton of interview shows and that's kind of how they do it.
Right.
But if I was to sit down and write out 10 to 15 questions to ask people, I know me, I'm going to get stuck in those questions and I'm not going to, like, I'm going to stop listening because I'm going to be focusing on how do I get to the next question versus me actively listening to someone and having that conversation and being in the moment and allowing things to go off on tangents. And that makes a lot better conversation. So to get back to what I was saying is, you know, I've had interviews where they started off really rocky, but because I hadn't set up a list of questions and all that, and I was listening, I picked up on something that somebody repeated like 3 or 4 times, and I was able to follow up with that and ask them about that. And then they opened up, and it ended up being a really great conversation.
Right.
So, you know.
Which is true. And I mean, like, I want that format, and I would like to say, getting feedback from different guests, like, they feel like that's what's happening, like, we're just having a conversation. And I've heard from listeners, they're like, they like that. They want to feel like they're in the room of two people having a deep conversation to see what they can grasp from it, what they can get from it. I think, like, I listened to an episode from Tim Ferriss, and it was he was interviewing Cal Fussman.
I don't know who that is. I mean, I know who Tim Ferriss is. I don't know.
He's a great interviewer. So he's like a master question asker. So he's interviewed like celebrities and stuff like that.
Right. So, and this is Cal?
Cal Fussman, yes. He's interviewed like Mike Tyson, like Muhammad Ali. Like he's a lot of the old school type interviewing. But just his thought process and the questions, and it just really burped me, and like just to think about how to grab someone and just have a conversation versus just like boom, bum, 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 bum.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. No, that's, I mean, that's exactly it is. If I lay out those questions, it's going to be that bum, 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 bum. And I know me enough to know that I'm going to get stuck in that trap of not allowing myself out if I have questions. So I go in blind. I don't have questions. I mean, I do a little bit of research, but we're graphic designers. There's not a heck of a lot you can. We're not celebrities. Was it Von Glitschka said, you know, being a famous graphic designer is the equivalent of being a famous plumber. Nobody outside of the plumbing community, you know, or graphic design community knows who you are. So, I can go tell my mom, oh, yeah, you know, Aaron Draplin, he did this and this and this. Yeah, it's just like, mom's going to go, who?
I think you have a better chance, to be honest, like these well-known designers by us, like you have a better chance getting the outside world's attention if you tell them what they've designed first.
Mm-hmm.
Because 9 times out of 10, they'll know something that these popular designers did. Like when Mackie mm-hmm. Saturday. Like if I tell them, okay, the Instagram, the logotype, or I tell them Silk, like my mom drinks Silk, and I tell them, oh, I know the guy that did that. They're like, oh, really? That's cool. Now it makes sense. If I just led with Mackie Saturday, even though he's a well-known designer, it's like, okay, that's nice. So it's funny how that works.
Yeah, and I've had Mackie on my show, and it was funny because you brought up Silk. And I just, in the process of talking to him, I completely blanked on that he did Silk, and he brought it up. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's the one I was trying to remember the time. So, yeah.
Yeah, we're still working on trying to get schedules to collide.
But he's really nice, and I'm freaking honored
that he's willing to do it. We got connected at Creative Stuff, and he put himself out there towards me, and I was, first of all, shocked, and second of all, I was, you know, I mean, kind of blown away that he was willing to do that. But we're still trying to work out the schedule. Me and Scotty took almost 9 months to finally get a schedule.
Yeah, well, I'm telling you, get the Calendly thing. It lets him pick what's best for him, it makes life so much easier.
It's true. So let's get back to you.
Sure.
Who would you say, like, because I'm on this track where I'm trying to surround myself with certain people. Mm-hmm. Who would you say is your support system? People that kind of kept you intact, people you pulled the good energy from. Who would you say that is?
Obviously my wife. And I don't just say that because she's my wife, but she's a graphic designer as well. So she understands what I do, and she, you know, when I have a crappy client that, you know, sends me 47 changes to a logo and doesn't understand that, you know, that's going to cost them money because we've gone past the scope of the initial stuff, she understands that. And she, you know, can listen to me vent, and, you know, sometimes she listens to me, and other times she tells me, stop being a whiny little, you know what? And, I paid attention to your email to keep it PG. I wanted to say something else. You know, so she'll call me on it when I need to be called on it, and she supports me when, you know, I need support. And other than that, two guys that I talk to every single day are Peter Bacchiao.
Okay.
And Fabio Perez. And those guys are my brothers. I mean, I don't know how I would make it through the week without them, whether it's, you know, bouncing off ideas or just, you know, BSing with them just to, you know, joking around and picking on each other about stuff. And then, you know, who else? I mean, there's tons of other people. There's, you know, you got the entire Creative South family, whether it's Mike or Peter or Lenny, and all the other people on staff. You know, there's a family within itself there. We've got, you know, Creative South has the Creative South family Slack channel, which is people who've been to Creative South or want to go to Creative South. You know, we're not picky about who we let in. It's basically,
yeah, if you Mike ask, has okay. been trying to get me on that channel. He's been telling me about a Slack that he needs me to get on, and I'm like, okay, sure, Mike, send me the link. But you know, Mike,
he hasn't sent it to you. Okay, I'll
Mike
send it to
like
you.
Mike is like busy done. Beyond measure, and
I will send it to you when we get done. And for your listeners, if you want to be part of the Creative South family Slack channel, just email me. It's jason@creativesouth.com. And I will hook you up. I'm an admin on there, so I can add people. So those are the, you know, the big ones as far as in our design community, and then, you know, friends, family,
right,
all the
right.
normal support that everybody else has.
So what is so, that dynamic like to, because I don't have no idea what that's like to have a spouse. I'm married. To have a spouse yeah. that's in the same field and kind of like understands this motion of what you're trying to do.
It's great. you know, we have very different design aesthetics.
Okay.
And she and I actually met working together at that printing company that I mentioned that I worked at, you know, right out the gate, right out of college. And, you know, we didn't start dating for another year or so after I actually left that company. But it's nice because we have very different aesthetics. We have very different as far as what our design interests are.
Okay.
Like she loves stationary design and things like that. I love branding work and I love beer packaging design and things like that. Those are what really get me. I think I have like 3 or 4 different books on beer packaging alone. But you know, we never really worked together until, probably about, I don't know, 3 or 4 months ago now.
I mean, it's on a project?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, we'd like ask each other's opinions on stuff. And,
but y'all never worked together.
No, but we've started doing it and it's been really cool. And we'd always been really hesitant about it. Well, I say we never worked together. So we both have this, and this stems from her. She got me into it. She loves that mid-century modern tiki culture.
Okay.
And she got me into it. And we, you know, before we had kids, there's actually, I guess you call it a conference, festival, whatever, that goes on in Fort Lauderdale, Florida at this tiki bar called the Maikai. It's huge. They have full-on dinner shows with like hula dancers and spinning flaming torches and drinks that will knock you on your butt. You know, they taste real fruity, but they are
sneaky.
95% rum with a splash of fruit juice for color and flavor. So we started doing like artsy craftsy projects with that, where we would make, you know, prints of different tiki things, and she would do paintings that were themed around era specific stuff, and you know, I would do these kind of, I don't know, not really pyrography, where it's kind of wood burning, but I would also like paint it and then put this heavy gloss over of these just very stark graphic tikis, and we would go down there and sell that stuff. So in that respect, we both like that retro culture, but that was the only sort of thing that we did, and it was just, that was more of a, hobby.
Yeah, it wasn't like a fun thing to do.
It was, we were making the stuff to sell the stuff to pay for the trip.
Gotcha.
That was pretty much it. You know, we never, not that we didn't have plans to do more with it, but we never really, they were half-hearted plans at best.
Gotcha.
And with this, with the recent freelance stuff, you know, I work in-house. I've got a full-time job for an engineering firm. It's a good company. They got good benefits. They got good pay. You know, it supports the family. My wife is, you know, since we had kids, is a freelancer, which she actually homeschools our kids. So she's stuck home with them all day, which makes her a saint for having any sanity left whatsoever.
All right.
But in the last, I don't know, since June, maybe, was when we really started working together on stuff. And it's, you know, it's still a process and we're still trying to figure things out, but we haven't, you know, haven't really argued about stuff revolving around that. I mean, married couple, we still argue about stuff and,
right.
You know, not often, but it does happen.
Yeah.
Anybody knows who's been in any sort of relationship.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's been really nice working with her, and I hope that's something we can continue to grow and, you know, do more with that. And
so how did that come about? Did y'all just, like, get a project and he was like, let's work together on it? Or, like, how did that initiation?
So like I said early on, I hadn't been doing much freelancing for years.
Gotcha.
Like I would have an occasional project maybe once a year and I just wasn't taking it on. And this past year I decided I wanted to do more stuff just to kind of creatively stretch my legs. Cause I love my company. I love what I do, but I've been working there for 5.5 years. So, you know, it's muscle memory at this point of, I know what I'm going to do. I know what things are going to be like. And I didn't want to get pigeonholed and stuck in just one aesthetic for the voice of that company.
Gotcha.
I wanted to be able to kind of flex that creative muscle and get outside my comfort zone. So I started reaching out to friends just saying, hey, if you've got any overflow, if you need anything, you know, let me know. And lo and behold, it actually worked. So I'm going to put that out there again. If you know of anything, if you have anything, I am actively seeking freelance work. But it worked a little too well at first.
Oh.
Where I had like this really big project that had a lot of components come in and a couple little projects. And I just, with working full time,
yeah,
you know, and freelancing and doing a podcast and having a wife and kids, I couldn't get to all of them. And so I just asked for her help on stuff. And, you know, I kind of acted as the
creative art director. Yeah.
Art director, creative director on it and said, hey, this is what I'm thinking. You know, can you kind of do something around that? And, you know, I think the benefit of the fact that, you know, it'll be 12 years in January that we've been married. We've been together almost 15 years now. And I think the benefit of that is we know each other so well that, you know, I can come to her with a half-baked idea of kind of what I'm thinking. And she can take that and run with that knowing what I kind of do and, you know, and vice versa. So that's worked out really well. But it really was just out of necessity of I put myself out there and I got a bunch of stuff in. Now I wish I had more stuff coming in because all that stuff is coming to an end at the moment.
Right.
And I don't have new stuff lined up. But so we just started working together on that and, you know, now we're trying to figure out like and define what each other's roles are in things. And, you know, she's going to take on more of the communication side of things just because I can't in good conscience or responsibly, you know, be at my job and emailing clients for freelance work. That's not exactly ethical or
right.
You're going to keep me my job.
Especially because you are doing design work at your job, right?
Yeah, but I mean, I work for an engineering firm, so it's not, you know, it's not like the clients are a conflict of interest, but it's, you know, doing work for a second job while you're at your first job is just, it's pretty crappy. You know, this doesn't make for a good employee, and I don't want to be that guy. They've, gotcha. You know, they do a lot for me, and, you know, that would be me taking advantage of them, and that's, I'm not that guy.
Yeah.
I try to avoid taking calls while I'm at work. If I do have to take a call, I try to schedule stuff around my lunch break.
Right.
Or, you know, if it can't be helped, I at least step out of the building and, you know, take a quick break to do that stuff. But, you know, for the most part, really that's what it is. I'm not going to work on my freelance stuff while I'm at my day job. That's just, it's dumb. So, you know, she's taken over more of the communication side of stuff and handling all of that. I'm doing more of the creative direction after hours stuff. Gotcha. And you know, I always say she's a much more talented designer than I am. But she's also a better writer than I am. So that makes things a lot easier. I think working together has been very helpful for both of us.
That sounds good. I'm hoping to get to that point. Because mine is a better writer than me.
Is she?
And I think, like, right, because I know how important writing is, even as a designer, it's very important.
Oh, yeah, and I'm terrible at it. Like, I've never been good at it. You know, it's not something that comes naturally to me. It's all the ideas get way too jumbled up in my head and they don't come out right. So I'm much happier to have somebody do it for me.
Makes sense. So the job that you work at, it's an engineering firm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm creative director for, we're an industrial engineering firm. And like I said, I've been there, five and a half years, be 6 years in May. But it's industrial engineering, so it's, you know, very linear, very, you know, everything's very masculine. There's definitely a set aesthetic. And then, you know, there are fun one-off projects that I get to do at work that vary from that. But for the most part, you know, we've really honed in on what our look is, and it's that sort of thing.
Okay. So is this something that this is like you're content with being at your job?
Yeah. No, I like having, like I said, I got kids and all. I like that stability.
Right.
I like knowing that, you know, I've got a paycheck coming in every week and I'm not having to rely on chasing somebody down who's 30 days late on their paying their bill or 90 days late, or worrying about when the next job is going to come in. I like having insurance. That's a very helpful thing.
Yeah.
Especially when you got little kids.
Right.
So I like that, and I think it's a nice balance.
Makes sense. Cool. Because, you know, there's the trend of everybody going independent, which,
I can't say I never fantasize about it, but I also like safety and stability. So, right.
You know, what I say is that, like, if someone asked my advice, I would say, like, listen, I'm not telling anyone that you should start a business or you should work for someone. All I'm telling you is to get into something that you enjoy doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Just find a way to get into something. So if that means working somewhere that you like what it is, go do that.
Yeah.
I'm just a firm believer of getting into something that you enjoy doing. It doesn't have to be starting a business or it doesn't have to be working for someone.
No, not everybody's, you know.
Yeah, not everybody's a number one.
Yeah, not everybody's a number one. Not everybody needs to be a freelancer. Right. You know, I'm very lucky that I have the opportunity to do freelance. And I don't get me wrong, I really like the extra money. But the big thing for me is, you know, I get to do creative things that I'm not necessarily going to be able to get to do at work.
Right.
And, you know, not that I don't get to do creative things at work, but like I said, we're very honed in on what our style is, and we're very, you know, we're going to keep within that. And even when we go out and do refreshes and things like that, you know, which at work, I'm actually in the process of doing a refresh for our ad campaign and all that stuff. It's still going to be similar.
Right.
And it's still, you know, it's still dictated by what the industry is and things like that. So I know where that's going to lead. So, you know, me getting to go out and do a menu for a food truck or a hunting logo or, you know, something else, you know, it's just gravy. It's something extra, and it gives me a chance to kind of stretch and, you know.
Sounds good.
That's fun.
Yeah. I mean, I'm basically doing the same thing. It's just that my day job has nothing to do with design. Like, I'm in finance.
Okay, so you got to fill me in. How do you go from architecture school?
Because I relocated, and
okay,
I moved from New York to Georgia, and at that time, just got to get into something, and it turned out to be something long term. So,
yeah, well, keep at it, and I'm sure you'll find something. And there seems to be.
I'm not really at the point of like. It's a problem. I'm complaining. I mean, I kind of have my routine, kind of know where I want to go. So
sure.
I mean, it's a means to an end, and you got a lot of goals, got a lot of plans, and it's helping us get there. I mean, that's why. So I'm not even like so emotionally connected to the plan. It's like, oh, should I do this? Should I do this? You know?
Yeah, no, I understand. I understand. Yeah. I think we've all had jobs like that.
Yeah. So, but so what's next? What is next for the podcast? What's next for Jason?
What is next for the podcast? What can I talk about? Got some cool guests coming up.
Oh, cool.
I'm talking with Joe Bosak Thursday. Like it won't go out Thursday. It'll go out in about a month.
And isn't that a good feeling?
Yeah. I've done it the other way around, and that's terrifying. and then, you know, trying to work on a website for the podcast itself. Hopefully getting a little newsletter launched for that sometime soon. And then it's a matter of finding time for all that stuff.
Right.
And then what else? Creative South is 6 months away.
Around the corner.
So gearing up for that, trying to line up stuff for other podcasters at Creative South this year, trying to figure out the logistics behind all that stuff.
When you say line up for other podcasters, explain that.
So I'm trying to think of who all we've had. So last year, we had Masters of One,
right.
Film Scouts, myself, and then Mark Hemian and Jill Buechelman were wandering around with their video camera doing the Undo podcast a little bit.
Okay.
Or video cast. I don't know what they were calling it at the time, because it was more of a video cast that sometimes they would strip the audio out of and put it on iTunes.
Right.
So they were wandering around and doing that. So this year we're going to, you know, bring in some different podcasts.
Okay,
and,
cool.
I'll still be there. And then I don't know who else we're going to have back. We're still working on all that stuff. And
that's cool.
Still working out all the details of how all that's going to work. And we're working on something that's... it's pretty exciting, but I can't talk about it, so I feel weird teasing it. I will tell you about it when we get off air. yeah, so that's what's exciting going on with the podcast. As far as with me, yeah, trying to find more freelance work just to, you know, it'd been so long since I did it. I have the bug now and I want to do more of it. So yeah, if you need, I'm on Dribbble, so you can find me there and find my work, and there's plenty of cool stuff. And hoping to take a little mini vacation sometime in October with my wife and kids and head down to my parents own a condo down at the beach, so it's a nice free stay.
What beach?
Orange Beach, Alabama.
Okay.
So, like Gulf Shores, all that. So yeah, so trying to head down there and just take a weekend off and relax and not have to worry about too much. Other than that, not a ton exciting. Picking out Halloween costumes for the kids.
Yeah.
Getting them to clean their room.
So advice. What advice would you have for creatives other from, I'll just let everybody know that listen to this, like, you guys have to go to Creative South. You don't have to be a designer. Go to Creative South and everything will change for you.
I would definitely give that advice. it's not always about finding your voice. But it is about finding what you want to do. I think that's one of the cool things about being a designer is I get to speak in a bunch of people's voices. Mm. So I get to service my clients and find ways to highlight their voice and their ideas. And I get to do that with the podcast too. It's, part of the reason for starting an interview show was I still don't know what I want to say. I mean, there are definitely days where I'm not to say that I'm not opinionated, but you can ask my wife. but there are certainly people who are much more interesting and have much more interesting paths than I do. And I get to allow them to share that. And that's a real privilege and an honor.
I love it, man. I love it. I mean, I really appreciate you coming on. Really appreciate you just being real easy. I didn't feel...
No, well, thanks. I really appreciate you having me on. This has been a lot of fun.
Yeah, man. I like your vibe.
Oh, thank you.
I enjoy the podcast, and I want nothing but, great things to happen for you, man.
Well, thank you. I've getting ready for this when you asked. I had heard of your show before, and I think I'd listened to like maybe one episode of Fit and Stuff In, but I've binged a bunch. That's why I made the Dylan joke, because I just listened to Dylan Mingus, his episode today at work, and I love Dylan. Dylan was probably one of my favorite people to talk to for the podcast.
Yeah, I still talk to him. Like, he's a good dude, man.
Yeah, he's so solid and just so easygoing. But you can tell he's got that fire in his belly, and if you did him wrong, it would come out too. So I listened to that one today, and I got Bob Ewing in the queue, and I've got a few more, but I really like what you're doing, and I kind of bounced around in the ones that I'm listening to, and I can really see the growth from when you started to where you are now. And it's really good, and keep at it.
Oh, appreciate it, man. The feeling is mutual. Thanks again for coming on the podcast. And I want you to enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks for chatting with me tonight.
All right.
You can always connect with me at DP Creates on Instagram or Twitter. If you ever want to have a conversation, ask a question. That's DP Creates at Instagram or Twitter. Thank you for listening to this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I would love to get your feedback, so please leave a review on iTunes and keep sharing the podcast on social media. Be blessed.